This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we'll talk to artists in our Bronx studio and listen to them play a live set. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you get your podcasts and on WFUV.org. Like and subscribe to stay up to date on all the latest episodes, music, and, of course, to find your next favorite artist or band. This is FUV Live Sessions. I'm Megan Aftermat, and I'm here with host Kara Manning at WFUV in New York City. Kara, talk to me about this week's artist.
Megan, Reina Tropical has released their debut album, Malagria. Fabi Reina has stepped into the light following the passing of Reina Tropical's co-founder, Sumo Diaz, in 2022. Although the album is defined as a solo project, Fabi has clearly been uplifted by the legacy of Sumo, their ancestors, their mother, and all of the people they have loved and have loved them. Malagria is a beautiful, bittersweet, emotional passage for this guitarist, singer, songwriter, and activist. This is Fabi, joined by bandmate Antonia Estela Perez with Cartagena on FUV Live Sessions. I'm Kara Manning with FUV Live, and that is Reina Tropical and Cartagena, and it is a privilege to have Fabi here at WFUV.
Thank you for having me.
I cannot tell you how excited I am to talk to you, because Malagria is one of those albums that the first time you hear it, you realize that it's something extremely special, not simply because of the songwriting, but because of all it represents in your life. And Fabi, the guitar has been a gateway to you, your ancestry, your voice, who you are as a person. Listening to Malagria, I feel that I got to know you without ever knowing you until now. And I wonder, from 2022 until now, as you were working on this album following Sumo's death in a accident, how in the world did you get to this place from where you were 2 years ago?
I think the simplest answer to that is that I got to this place because I was able to create Malagria. I think without having the outlet of Malagria and the music that had already been prepared for this moment, I wouldn't be able to sit here and speak about Sumo or be able to speak to you or maybe even get out of bed. So Malagria turned into kind of just this creative expression for me to pour my grief into, for it to become something bigger than me, for it to be, to touch others, and for these conversations to be happening that I have been having the last 4 to 7 years with Sumo and with other people that we traveled to and communicated with and collaborated with, you know, in part for this album. But when he was around, we didn't plan for Malagria to exist. This album came to be 8 months after he passed away. So, you know, to me, it feels a little bit like magic, like the surrendering that happens when you grieve. Sometimes you just don't have an option but to just let go of everything and let go of yourself and rewrite everything. And I think Malagria was that opportunity for me.
I should mention also that joining you today is Antonio Estela Perez. And, you know, watching the two of you perform, there is so much joy and sunshine in what you do together. And this is an album that honors everyone who came before you, your ancestors, your mother. You have a beautiful relationship with your mother. A song like Cartagena, that was the first single that was sort of that came out from this album. Was there a significance why that should be the first single that sort of introduced people to who you were now as a solo artist?
Well, I think Cartagena for me embodies a little bit of everything that this album brings. And I think at the root of it is my relationship to the land and how that created the opportunity in the relationship between my relationship with myself and sort of my curiosity and my appreciation for my own pleasure and my own joy and the importance of prioritizing that. And then from there, it was like really being able to open myself to being in love with the world and being in love with, you know, different people around me, but also with my bandmate, with Sumo, and with the music we were making. And so Cartagena, for me, it sings. I'm singing about how the moon and the herbs and the waters are guiding me into feeling this tenderness and caressing from, like, the wind, you know. And to me, that was a big opening for my life, just to really feel held by the earth. You know, it changed everything about how I walk every day. So
and it also seems that you're still in constant dialogue in some way with Sumo.
Yeah.
And with this album too, which is quite striking and actually made me a bit weepy because the realization of what this was right. really quite meaningful. Malagria, the word kind of means bad happiness or in translation, Manu Chal had actually coined the phrase in a way. Is Manu somebody that you revere? Obviously, as an activist, you are an activist. Yeah. I would imagine that there's a parallel.
I think Reina Tropical has always been the investigation of intuition as diasporic beings in our experiences, as being in the diaspora. Oftentimes we don't know anything about, we've been so severed from our history. We've been so severed from our land, from our people, from our customs, so much so that sometimes we hate ourselves. You know, we grow up hating ourselves, even subconsciously. And something that I think Manu Chao did for the diaspora was bring worlds together, be in that investigation. And his music in the life of Reina Tropical brought us a lot of energy to continue investigating that diaspora through sound and through conversations and collaborations with people from different lands. So yeah, sort of paying homage to Manu Chao and the work that, and the blueprint that he created, you know, that I think in part we're sort of following, you know, and I feel proud of that. Because I really look up to artists like Manu Chao that, in a way, you know, put everything at stake to say, like, that the music and the activism can live together and is important, actually, to bring to mainstream music or to, you know, just the music in general.
If you could have a conversation with someone either living or who has passed, mm-hmm. obviously Sumo and other mm-hmm. people then, but somebody who is a musician mm-hmm. who has also married that activism, mm-hmm. who would you want to talk to and what would you want to ask them as you embark on this journey for yourself and your mm-hmm. life ahead?
I definitely Chavela Vargas, because I think that she lived such a unique and extraordinary, tough life, being a closeted lesbian for her whole life, but then still really breaking, being a groundbreaking artist in a culture that is so extremely machista and anti.
And she dressed as a man.
Right.
And it was shocking back then.
Yeah.
She passed in, what, 2012 or yeah. not that long ago.
Yeah. And I remember watching the documentary and hearing that, you know, she got kicked out of her home because of wearing pants. And I thought, wow, what a wild statement, that wearing pants was so revolutionary at that time. It was so threatening that, you know, her family kicked her out of her house. And for her to come out at 80 years old, I just feel like there's a whole other part of her life that I would love to know about and to hear just her life and her world as a lesbian.
Yeah. And most people know her from Pedro Almodovar's films mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah.
Because she was in those.
That's right.
Too. I would love for you. I wish you were still alive.
Me too.
She would love talking to you.
Yeah.
So there are interstitials throughout this album mm-hmm. in which you are having conversations both with yourself, with Sumo, you mm-hmm. hear his voice on, mm-hmm. on this album. Queer Love in Afro-Mexico mm-hmm. was something that the two of you held dear as kind of a mantra.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk at length about that. What did that mean to you? And how, I mean, I love the fact that you initially, when you first met Sumo, didn't trust him.
Yeah, yeah.
But somehow that bond evolved into something that has become, you know, it's spiritual at this point.
Yeah, totally.
But Queer Love and Afro-Mexico, explain yeah. that motto and what that means to you.
Well, yeah, I think it took the majority of our time together on this earth for me to trust him. And and I just, you know, I've just never trusted men. I just haven't. And I think that comes from, like, being raised by a single mom and just seeing culturally what a different experience that we had as Mexican women. Because of that, I love Mexico for so many reasons, and it's an extremely sexist country. And as is Latin America, as is the U.S., you know, and so I grew up just having that tension in me. And when I met Sumo, the conversations that we had that were so passionate and was from my experience being a queer, light-skinned, brown Mexican woman and him being a dark-skinned, brown Mexican man who's straight. And that was such a wide topic of conversations, you know. He would never know what my experience is as a queer woman, and I will never know his experience as a dark-skinned, brown man. And initially, in a way, those differences, you know, that While we were making music, while we were also creating this beauty together, allowed us to kind of really face that we will never know these things and just listen, you know, and just be able to listen to each other and figure out, well, how can we be in each other's lives? How can we fight for each other's injustices and speak for that as that as our purpose, you know? And so Queer Love in Afro Mexico is sort of embodies like the spectrum of our experiences and all the injustices within that, you know, the femicides, the missing and murdered Indigenous women, Two-Spirit folks, and then also the injustices of Afro-Mexicanos and how that's erased from Mexican culture, you know, how Mexico left them out of the census until 2020. So all of those topics of conversations that we've had over the last 7 years, and now being able to bring them to this conversation, to the public, through this album, you know, that to me is also something that I didn't really realize I was doing until the album was done, and kind of thinking like, okay, now the conversations that were held between him and I only are now for the world.
And, you know, the decision to bring those interstitials, those conversations into the album, mm-hmm. was that was the plan from the beginning. You really wanted to do that as sort of passages from one song to the next.
Yeah, I saw this album as a documentary piece visually first. And I think for me, like, I just wanted it to embody, I wanted it to look back at the album and remember the memories and the moments and the traveling and with him, but also with myself, like when I fell in love with myself, when I had the moments of realizing that I was speaking to my ancestors consciously, when I felt in love, I was also falling in love during this album. And there's a lot of just love songs too, you know, with someone else. And so there's just a lot of, it's a big documentary piece for me. You know, for me, it carries everything that I've wanted, I would want to remember.
You know, as I said, listening to this album, I felt that I was getting to know someone mm-hmm. that I did not know mm-hmm. because it's all there in this beautiful record.
Yeah, and I will also just add that a big piece of this album is remembering. You know, what I have learned through all of these experiences is that in order for me to connect with any part of my lineage, all the history that I've been severed from, all the traditions that I've been severed from, I need to learn how to remember. And that is inclusive of all the wisdom that I hold within myself when I put myself and make the space to remember these memories that my great-great-grandmother had, you know? And so I also think that this album is sort of like a platform, a foundation for people to close their eyes and begin to remember.
Which seems like a perfect segue mm-hmm. into Conexión Ancestral. Mm-hmm.
That song had there was this memory that I have specifically of, I stayed in this horse barn for about a month. I was just sleeping with the horses for a whole month. And my grandpa actually, he had a farm and he was obsessed with horses. And so I got to really connect with him for the first time. And that was my first time ever even having that conscious sensation of like, wow, I'm really connecting and learning about my history through this conversation that I'm having with my ancestors. And sitting outside, and there was this huge storm, and I was just looking up at, and it was in the desert, so it hadn't rained in months. And it was kind of this huge thunderstorm. It wasn't supposed to rain, but it just came through all of a sudden and it started pouring. And it just felt like this huge cleanse, you know, and that was just kind of telling me like, you can choose to walk this path. You can choose to keep learning from us and being in this relationship, or you can go back to the extremely numbing, you know, running a business for 12 years life that you've been having. And in that moment, I just remember, I just felt like nothing belongs to me. Everything belongs to the earth. Everything, my purpose here is to find my connection with the land and find connection with the people and distribute this message of reciprocity. So Conexión Ancestral is just kind of about like honoring the indigenous wisdom that lives within us and that lives on the land and that lives on with the original stewards, and just listening to that and listening to the water and listening to the mountains.
Reina Tropical in Studio A with Conexión Ancestral from the new album Malagria. I am here with Fabi Reina. I am just so enjoying our talk. I must mention, because it is just so tremendous, you are the founder of She Shreds Media, mm-hmm. which used to be She Shreds Magazine.
Yes.
You, I am looking at your guitar. Mm-hmm. Tell us, first of all, given the fact that you're a brilliant guitarist, what is this beautiful guitar that you were playing right now?
Yeah, it's the St. Vincent Ernie Ball guitar. I think they put that out maybe 2016. But it's the guitar that St. Vincent designed ergonomically for all kinds of different bodies. And you know, I wanted to have like a lot of criticism for it, but I just simply love it.
It's a beautiful guitar. Now, She Shreds was really important to you. I love the story, the fact that your mother was so instrumental in sort of not pushing you into guitar, but allowing you to discover that you could be a guitarist. She gave you that free rein mm-hmm. to figure out that's what was calling you. There was summer camp involved. Can you briefly mm-hmm. explain what happened? Because it's such a lovely story.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always someone in your sort of family that's going to break cycles in order for something new to happen and a new path to be taken. And my mom was that person for our family. And she always wanted for me to just have the option to be in my fullest potential. And I discovered guitar not because she necessarily, you know, wanted to give me that opportunity, but because she was a single mom working four jobs and just kind of put me in anything that was free that she could put me into. And when I was nine, that was one of the things was a guitar camp, Natural Ear Music in Austin, Texas. And I fell in love with the guitar, but the community wasn't there. The community of a lot of older men would always tell me that I wasn't allowed to play lead guitar. So right when I was about to stop playing guitar, she drove me to the Girls Rock Camp in Portland, Oregon. And from there, I kind of learned how to merge the world of activism with music and also like all of this extreme anger that I had from being a teenager and give that an outlet that looked like She Shreds eventually.
And there's a great mission statement on the She Shreds mm-hmm. Website that I would encourage everybody to find and look for and start delving mm-hmm. into the wonders of what you have done here, Fabi. But you write, a lot of us became a product of this decades-long exclusion and wrongful portrayal of women. Men objectified women. Women became used to it. Boys followed this culture, and girls either gave up or spent their lives trying to prove they belonged. Mm. And definitely, guitar culture was so guilty of that mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. ever and still is. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. people like you were changing that.
It was my first time, as I was just 19 or 20 when we really went all in. And it was extraordinary just to see how the unity of women and people who felt excluded from something and something as kind of precious as expressing through the tool of guitar, which is how I see it. And to feel like that wasn't somewhere that you belonged, I think is really detrimental to who we can be and what our voice can say and do. And so to come in just with that passion, you know, and ask for what we needed and what we wanted and to see the guitar industry change was really amazing, you know, and it really taught me just the power of people coming together.
When you are playing guitar, when you are lost in your head with the instrument that you love, what is your strength? How do you feel when you are playing?
Well, mainly I feel like the guitar is kind of my shield. I feel like when I'm with my guitar, I've always felt like the guitar says what I can't say. And so I just feel protected, really, in a way that I don't think I feel any other time. So more than anything, the guitar is my protector and my voice and sort of keeps me aligned with myself. And sometimes, you know, it's as simple. I don't even have to play much. I just have to play a few notes. And I don't know, she just kind of lets me say it as softly as I actually want to or as loud as I want to, but I just can't really do that with my voice. But somehow we've created a relationship where she knows.
I find it stunning that you still feel that you have some imposter syndrome with mm-hmm. yourself as a singer because mm-hmm. your voice is beautiful. But you would have preferred to have stayed in the background as a guitarist, as a producer, and just let somebody else sing. So that leap forward of you now being a front person, mm-hmm. how, mm-hmm. how, I mean, you are absolutely glorious to watch in concert, as is Antonia. I'm not forgetting you back then. But how do you feel better? Do you feel better about it the more you've been out there doing it?
Yeah, now I just feel it brings out a whole other side of me. I mean, being a front person, I really misunderstood it. I really misunderstood the purpose of, you're a whole energy worker. You know, you're really bringing energies together and you're holding people's energies and you're moving them around. You're moving people's energies within themselves, and it's such an important piece of music, and I'm learning how to do that, and it's a really powerful thing, you know, to be working with energy and so singing and performing just makes me feel really confident in myself. It brings a whole other type of confidence, you know. I have always been in the back and have always not been a front person, and at first I was extremely awkward. It's a practice, and it's a practice just in being able to, learn how to protect, learn how to guide, learn how to speak from the heart, and just stay aligned, you know. And there's a lot of things that come with that, but I think at the root of it is singing aligns you whole body. So I'm learning more and more every day about it.
Fabi, I could continue to talk to you forever. Mm-hmm. I know that we cannot do that today. I did wonder what, when you look at where you have come and where you are now with the release of Malagria and where what you would like for yourself moving ahead. Mm. What is most important to you as you sort of gauge the horizon?
My prayer for Malagria, since Malagria started to come to fruition, has always been just to be ready for whatever is to come. Because something can come, and if I'm not ready, then I don't actually receive it, and I don't actually get to be in that, you know? And that has happened to me a few times, where my dream has come to me, and it's sat right in front of me. But mentally, spiritually, physically, I was burnt out. I wasn't ready to receive it. And what I want is, I want to just be open to anything that comes, and to be in that mystery. I don't want to know. I don't want to have a vision for what I expect to happen. I just want it to come, but I want to be fully spiritually, mentally ready to go 100% for whatever asks me.
Well, yeah. Thank you for today. I apologize for my terrible Spanish, which I did beforehand.
You were great. You were great.
I much prefer you saying your album's title than me. But you are going to end today with Suavecito, which also includes Antonia Estela Perez as well, who has been throughout this entire set.
Yeah. Suavecito is a song just about letting go, relaxing, you know, forgetting about all the tension and all of the workload that one might walk with every day, and just kind of letting yourself relax and wake up late and sit by the beach and maybe receive a kiss on the cheek.
I love that. Fabi Reina of Reina Tropical, thank you so much. And this is a gorgeous album. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Damas y caballeros, es un orgullo para nosotros presentar a la reina de los ritmos tropicales, la internacional.
Lo que quiero yo, un besito en la mejilla, lo que quiero yo, un besito en la mejilla, lo que quiero yo, un besito. prosperidad.
WFUV, The Bronx. Órale pues, estoy lista.
That was an FUV live session and conversation with Reina Tropical at WFUV in New York City. Thanks to Fabi Reina and their bandmate Antonia Stella Perez for joining FUV live sessions in our studio and to the Psychic Hotline label. This episode's audio team included Jim O'Hara, Aaron Merriman, and Zach Tomasi. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. FUV live sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our assistant producers for this episode were Diana Juarez and Ina Volovich. Megan Offermat is FUV Live Sessions executive producer. Subscribe to FUV Live Sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can catch the latest episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. New episodes drop every Monday. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions at WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm Kara Manning, host and co-producer of this episode with Reina Tropical.